But first, tomorrow marks the fourth year that the Women's March will take place in Washington, D.C. and around the world. But 4 years after the original march was ignited by the election of President Donald Trump, where does the march stand? ASU professor Meka Ward recently came into our studios to talk more about it with our co-host Lauren Gilger and the significance of that original march just after the 2016 election.
Well, it's interesting. You know, Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren recently named the Women's March as the pivotal turning point that motivated Americans to get active in their community, to protect democracy, to run for office, to get more engaged both in national, but more importantly in local politics. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that moment in 2017, we can sort of identify it as a watershed moment that galvanized millions of people here in the United States and abroad. And I think that that's the best, really the best way to think about what the Women's March in 2017 represented moving forward now, 3 years later.
Yeah. So going into its fourth year, things mm-hmm. have changed, though. The environment has changed. The political environment has changed. Mm-hmm. How do you see the role of this march now?
So I think the Women's March has evolved into both a national, having a national and global presence, serving primarily as a platform in terms of the U.S. presence, as a platform that is comprised of staff and chapter leaders at the state and local levels, as well as partnerships with what they call allied organizations. What's even more interesting, I think, is that they've also branched out internationally, and you see the development of a separate organization, the Women's March Global, that has its own mission, its own campaigns, its own leadership structure that's distinct from the U.S.-based march. So, again, I think it was one of those moments where a small group of individuals who are able to tap into the zeitgeist of what the 2016 election represented for folks, tap into that zeitgeist and energize. And so from 2017 on, we've seen the emergence of probably hundreds of organizations, both small sort of community-based collectives to national organizations, and the reinvigoration of historic women's organizations like NOW and the Feminist Majority to really serve as the platform to encourage and for people to find information about how to get involved in their local communities and to educate themselves on what community organizing and activism looks like.
So to you, it's really achieved a lot in terms of just re-engaging mm-hmm. a lot of folks in the political system.
Right. And, you know, of course, I don't speak for the organization, but it looks like the organization has really moved in the direction of seeing itself as that space to provide education and resources and information to encourage both young folks and folks across the generational divide to get involved and to be active in their communities. And so having that space for information, for training, for organizing support is vital to folks getting active and involved in community organizing.
So as we look at what's happened since then, Me Too and the Me Too movement has been a massive part of that, right? How has that changed the Women's March? How has it overshadowed kind of what the Women's March was aiming to do initially? Has it merged?
Well, it's interesting. I think what's important to remember is the Women's March is one organization that's part of a larger set of social movements, not even just one social movement, but set of social movements. So when we think about the women's movement, often we use that phrase, the women's movement, as if it's a singular movement with a single set of organizations that are tethered to it, when in fact, really, we should be talking about this as the women's movements and the sort of continuum of what I like to talk about as broader global justice movements. Mm-hmm. There's a continuum of movements that are centered around a broad-based set of multi-issued platforms, from women's rights, gender-based violence, gender inequality, to racial equality, immigration, tackling class-based inequality. Mm-hmm. So if we think about global justice as the umbrella for a whole range of issues that are linked to not only identity, social groups, but issues of inequality, systemic, historic, modes of inequality. Women's March is sort of one slice of this larger continuum of global justice movements.
In that vein, is it diverse enough, I guess? So the organizers of the Women's March in the past have been accused of being, you know, anti-Semitic. They've changed boards. They've really aimed to be intersectional. Are they meeting that goal?
In terms of the Women's March organization as a single organization, in terms of representational diversity, some might argue, yes. In terms of their leadership, they have changed quite significantly. The majority of the founding board members are no longer part of the organization. They've moved on to other social justice initiatives. They've reconstituted their board. They've had new elections recently. So if we're just thinking about sort of racial, ethnic, representational diversity, one could make the argument that yes, it's a relatively diverse cross-section of women from various religious, ethnic, and cultural communities that mm-hmm. are reflected in the new board of the Women's March.
So I want to then ask you a little bit about the history and how this fits into the broader history of women's movements, quote unquote, in this country, right? This is not the first Women's March. In fact, this is the centennial, right, of mm-hmm. women getting the right to vote this year.
Right. In fact, thinking about the Women's March organization, after the 2017 March in Washington and the various marches around the country, they hosted what they called the inaugural Women's Convention in Detroit in the latter part of 2017. And that convention was really to build momentum for what we think of as the contemporary women's rights movements, a process that, as you said, dates all the way back to 1848 with the Seneca Falls Convention, which was the first convention to galvanize around women's suffrage. And so celebrating the 100th year of gaining the right to vote, I think that while the efforts of the Women's March are critical and important, you also see sort of simultaneous efforts to celebrate this 100th year sort of mile marker with various organizations around the country doing celebratory efforts in that regard. But what's important is to recognize that in the celebration of the 1920 amendment, we haven't lost sight of the reality that women's inequality is still front and center issue, right? In fact, Amnesty International just released a study of young people around the world that showed that gender inequality and violence against women are in the top 10 most important issues for young people around the world. Mm. So we know that gender-based violence and gender-based inequality, they're not relics of the past to be celebrated as something that we've overcome, but they are, in fact, vital to understanding how inequality still sustains itself.
That is Mako Ward, Clinical Assistant Professor and Faculty Lead in African and African Studies in ASU School of Social Transformation. Mako, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.